In his first primetime address tonight, President Biden says he will reflect on what we've been through as a nation 1 year into the coronavirus pandemic. The president will take a moment to remember the roughly 530,000 Americans who have died from COVID-19. And he says he will launch the next phase of his administration's response.
Last March 11th, 2020 was a day that changed everything for many Americans. The economy soon went into a free fall as millions of people lost their jobs, and those lucky enough not to be working on the front line hunkered down at home. And our politics complicated the pandemic response and still does. Let's take some time to look back and ahead, first with Dr. Amesh Adalja, a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Dr. Adalja, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me.
And a year later, 2.6 million people dead around the globe and more than 500,000 here in the U.S. alone. How are you reflecting on this day?
I think about what could have went right in this pandemic if countries around the world would have taken it seriously in the early days when I think the battle was really lost, especially in the United States, the time lost in January, February, most of March. And what a different pandemic trajectory we could have had in the United States. And the same is true for many Western countries, that we all could be looking like Taiwan, which had 8 deaths because they took a proactive response that really valued pandemic preparedness.
I want to play this tape from President Trump, then President Trump, a year ago today from his White House address to the nation. In this speech, he enacted a travel ban. He talked about antiviral drugs. He talked about practicing good hygiene, but didn't mention mask wearing. I guess in hindsight, I mean, we weren't even doing that at the time. Let's listen.
Testing and testing capabilities are expanding rapidly day by day. We are moving very quickly. The vast majority of Americans, the risk is very, very low. Young and healthy people can expect to recover fully and quickly if they should get the virus.
Do you remember that speech? And in hindsight, how do you think it shaped the path that this country took with the virus?
I do remember that speech, and I think there were many more like it. And I think that when it comes to looking at pandemic preparedness, having leadership that faces the facts, that doesn't evade, that is able to take expert advice and turn that into a way to motivate citizens to take protective actions, I think is really critical. And I would say that when he talks about the fact that testing is getting better, I mean, that's almost laughable, because I think even now, in March of 2021, we still don't test as well as we should, that it still is something we can't test for us, test ourselves, you know, at home twice a week or something like what we wanted to do. We don't have the ability to test the way South Korea did even now, I would say. So I do think that even in March, by that time, many of us thought, even if there hadn't officially been declared a pandemic, this was a pandemic, that the United States was going to fare fairly bad because we had so many undetected chains of transmission, because our testing was so bad in January and February when it counted, when you couldn't test somebody unless they came from China, even though we knew the virus was outside of China by that time. And we couldn't test people with mild symptoms. So if you had a sore throat, you couldn't be tested, even though you might be contagious. So we knew that was setting us up for what happened in New York and what happened in many other cities, that the die was cast. And at that point—
Can you explain why? Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Could you explain why? I mean, by any measure, the United States is one of the most advanced countries in the world. And yet, here we are.
So if you look at this virus, it's an efficiently spreading respiratory virus. It's got a spectrum of symptoms, which range from very mild to no symptoms at all to severe symptoms. And it spreads efficiently from human to human. We knew that already in January from the data coming out of China. If you put all that together and you kind of dilly-dally for 2.5 months of really doing nothing, not fortifying our nursing homes, not setting up an appropriate testing regimen, not increasing public health infrastructure to do contact tracing, not looking at personal protective equipment supplies, not telling hospitals to get ready to make sure they have enough ventilators and oxygen tubing and all the rest of that. If you give a virus like this a 2.5 head start, the game is over. You can't do that. That's why a country like Taiwan, which I keep bringing up, jumped into action on December 31st, 2019, just on a rumor that there was something coming. And look how they fared. I mean, they had a vice president who has a PhD in epidemiology, and we had a vice president who was what he was.
Exactly. And that's why my last question for you, I mean, you're sort of laying out my point here. I want to know philosophically, from your point of view, how we could let that happen.
I think it's really because this isn't something that people valued. I think in the United States, we assumed that everything is easy and it wasn't going to be difficult, that we were the most prepared country, and that this is something that happens other places. It couldn't happen here, and that we would have the wherewithal to be able to do it. And I think that that's something that many of us in the field had been arguing against for some time, saying we are not ready. And we've written report after report talking about how a pandemic would unfold here if we were not proactive, if we didn't fund public health, if we didn't have the infrastructure to keep cases to a manageable level. We've warned about hospital capacity problems and hospital preparedness being undervalued as well. So I think that this was set up. I mean, this is the problem with public health emergencies, that they go through these cycles of panic and neglect or boom and bust, where when something is in the headlines, people care about it. But when it recedes from the headlines, it recedes from politicians' priority lists. And I think that's the problem, is this isn't something people value. They don't care about their public health departments. They don't care how many gonorrhea cases are not occurring because the public health department is robust, or how many tuberculosis cases don't spread because public health intervenes. It's all unseen to them. And I think we can't afford to do this any longer, because there will be a next pandemic, and this one really illustrates what happens when you don't do the right things.
Dr. Adalja, stay with us. I want to talk more about lessons learned from all of this, but let's bring in Kimberly Atkins, senior opinion writer at the Boston Globe. And Kimberly, it became clear very early on that countries that put public health first fared better than those that put health of their economies first, like here in the United States, in Brazil and Sweden. I mean, epidemiologist Peter Hotez says, quote, "We refused to launch a federal response and we came up small every time. We have seen how much it has cost us in human lives. But what bigger lessons can we take from this? We're still struggling with putting the economy first versus public health."
Yeah, I think that was a problem, is that those two things were treated as the polar opposite of one another, as dichotomies, as opposed to protecting both in order to protect both. There was a way to protect public health with an eye on getting the pandemic under control, and that in turn would have left the economy in a better place, rather with the fits and starts and unequal policies being applied across the country. And I think that was a reflection of where we were in 2020. It was a very polarizing time, continues to be a polarizing time in America, but it was also an election year. And everything about the response to this virus, to this pandemic, was politicized, from mask wearing to policies of closing down some businesses where the spread would be most dangerous, to everything. And that is where that time was wasted. And a lot of the problems that we heard Dr. Adalja lay out, it stemmed directly from that political response.
Well, the thing is, we're still dealing with this. We still have states' rights versus federal mandates that we're still contending with. But President Biden has only been in office for 51 days now. You wrote a few months ago that he has shown what it means to look and sound like a leader instead of a pitch man. How do you think history will remember these first few months? And I know it's hard to answer that kind of question, because we're still very much in the thick of this crisis.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I think it depends on the next couple of months. I think if the measures, particularly this really massive aid package that just passed this week, shows effectiveness, if it helps bolster the economy, if it helps keep people from losing their homes or in losing their livelihoods, then it will be a positive reflection on the early days of the Biden presidency. And if it doesn't work, I think it'll be absolutely devastating for it, regardless of what he inherited in all the problems that they had. The thing that's tough here is that in a lot of ways, things both worked well and worked terribly. For example, the vaccine distribution infrastructure was really problematic in the beginning, but that overshadows the fact that the vaccine development was so quick, and that we have so many vaccines from so many drug makers that are available now. But even with that, you see the political problems coming into play, with some local officials not wanting the Johnson & Johnson one-shot vaccine because they think falsely that it is substandard, or that it isn't as good. And so we're still struggling with these things. I think time will tell in the next couple of months how we emerge and how it will reflect on Joe Biden and everyone else in office right now.
And I just have a minute left here, but I want to ask both of you what key lessons we do need to take forward as we get closer, hopefully, to the end of this pandemic. Kimberly, start with you and then Dr. Adalja, please.
That politics needs to stay out of epidemiology and that you need to have a plan in place, just as Dr. Adalja said, and be ready to go with it in the event of any sort of national crisis.
Doctor?
Yeah, I agree. I think that infectious disease emergencies are going to continue to be something we have to face, and we have to look at it in a proactive manner, in a non-political manner, and think about this as part of national security, because now we all know what many of us in this field have been warning about, what the cascading impacts of a pandemic can be and how much of it could be preventable if people looked at this bright-eyed and without any purpose of evasion.
1 year on, 2.6 million people dead around the globe. Dr. Amesh Adalja, senior scholar at Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, and Kimberly Atkins, senior opinion writer at the Boston Globe. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.